riding in the world that I like better than bacon.
Good afternoon to you. Thursday. And it is time to head into the garden. Before we pull Master Gardener Ed Byarski up on the phone, we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. And they're saying thank you to the community for giving each other's flowers so often this season. Looking ahead to next year, orders have been placed for new trees and shrubs, and looking even further ahead down the road, the Flower Farm itself is for sale. Flower Farm is located at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 772-3464. And with that, we're going to welcome Master Gardener Ed Byarski to the phone lines. Ed, hello, and how are you?
Oh, pretty good. We've had some nice weather, and I don't know about your neighborhood. Pressure is high, and the forecast is for temperatures into the upper 20s.
Oof.
Up here in Juneau. I don't know if you've got that in your forecast, but it doesn't really matter, because I'm going to press on gardening anyway.
Yes, indeed. There's still work to be done, for sure.
Yeah, I'm digging things up, tearing up some salmonberry patches. We're going to get ready to plant some hydrangeas here shortly to beautify our yard. Today I was planting. This past week, we've worked on building new garden boxes in a brand new backyard, new virgin sand base. And all that, we built, how many, two, four, six, eight, I think eight or nine garden boxes, two of which will be in a hoop house. And today we planted some currant and gooseberry bushes in there. And with the kids, I planted some kale seeds in the prospective hoop house, which we won't put the plastic over it till spring. But that way it will take off, and it's in one of the kind of colder areas of Juneau, closer to the glacier, that is, compared to my place or to downtown Juneau. So everybody's excited about that. They're going to have berries, lots of berries, and we put some fruit trees in and try to protect them from the bears and the other other pests that we have.
Nice. Okay, staying real busy then.
Very much so. Oh, yeah. No, I finished one project and two more pop up on my list trying to get done before. I won't even mention what's up on the mountaintops around here yet.
Yes, yes. We know it's coming, but that which shall not yet be named.
let it stay there for another 3 weeks, and maybe I get my stuff done, and then I can go hibernate like a bear or do something else.
Totally. Well, I want to float out there to the listeners that if they have any kind of end-of-season questions they want to get in here, 772-3808 is their chance this afternoon to get a gardening question answered by the one and only Ed Byarski. I did have a listener stop me on the street the other day and ask me a garlic-related question.
Okay.
So maybe before we dive into anything else, I could share this with you. This listener had planted garlic a little on the early side, it sounds like, right around the end of September or so. The garlic's been in the ground probably coming up on 3 weeks, and boy oh boy, it just got right to it and already sprouted, and there's a plant coming up out of the ground, you know, 4 or 5 inches already.
Wow.
And so this gardener was kind of just wondering, is this particular plant thing a lost cause at this point, just because it went in a little too early? And is there anything that they can do to, recover from the sprouting already? Or is it probably best to yank these ones out and in another week, or maybe this weekend even, get them in while it's a little colder?
Couple things. So, yeah, if they were just planting at the end of September, unless the garlic that they were planting had been refrigerated, so it's kind of like with bulbs and all that stuff. There's a certain amount of time they need of cold, below 40 degree temperatures before they will start to sprout. You know, and there's charts for that for all the different flower bulbs. Because lots of people force them to bloom, but But still, to make them bloom, they still need to have that much chilling time. Mm. So that might have been how that happened. I mean, this is kind of a guess, because really, end of September is not too early. I mean, I didn't get it planted that early, but, you know, I'm about done with that planting. So the problem, of course, is if they sprout green leaves this time of year, and that's really exceptionally early. I've had them doing that in late November, December, and still that's too early for the plants because it's going to be too cold. We will get cold weather at some point, you know, La Nina forecast, whatever that's going to be. Who knows if we're going to get snow or more snow or less snow, more rain, whatever. So for those plants that are already sprouting, potentially cover them with seaweed if it's available, or straw, or even more soil. Bury them more deeply, trying to keep them protected, and hope for the best. Otherwise, you know, if they have some of these that are particularly tall already, they can go the other direction, leave them uncovered, and for those that do keep growing and growing, you know, into November, December, harvest them for green garlic. I mean, just the green garlic tops, cut them off. It doesn't mean that they're going to have great success with the same clove resprouting, because you're using a bunch of energy. I mean, it might sprout some more, and it might not. Kind of like chives, you know, we cut them and then they keep growing.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I mean, that, you know, at least for those, hopefully it isn't the whole patch, hopefully it doesn't have hundreds of these that are doing that. Just a few, selected few. So, and if they kept track or know what variety they were, then that would be something to think about next year, that if they have more of those and they survive and stuff, make sure you plant them later next year also.
Okay. I had asked about variety, and it sounded like this gardener thought that these perhaps might not be hardneck. Would that have some influence on the early sprouting, do you reckon, or...?
Maybe. Well, yeah, maybe. If they were store-bought garlic, because very often that stuff, the stuff that comes to your local grocery store, ours too, usually is in a refrigerated container. And they may or may not have been stored refrigerated down south before they shipped it north. So, again, that would help trick the bulb, the cloves, into sprouting sooner also.
Gotcha.
And as I understand it, like down in California, they don't plant the soft neck garlics that are then harvested later until usually January or February anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they do sprout more quickly. So that's kind of one of the reasons why planting hard neck garlic, they are better adapted to colder climates and then hopefully don't sprout too soon.
Okay, so that's an interesting and eye-opening explanation of why it would have sprouted, probably most likely a result of refrigeration, which does suddenly make sense that if you planted it while it was warm enough, coming out of a refrigerator, that's a little bit like spring arriving after winter.
You got it.
Okay.
Right. So. Basically, you're tricking the bulbs, just like we do when we're forcing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give them the chilling time they need, and then bring them into the warmth, and they send up shoots and hopefully flowers, and they sell them, so which is, you know, you can see, have potted bulbs, potted flowering bulbs, at a time of year, you know, like in, you know, early winter, midwinter, when we're looking for some extra color anyway. So it's a marketing gimmick, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay, so it's not that this person should necessarily yank these out and replant fresh cloves right now, though maybe it wouldn't hurt to plant a few rows of fresh cloves, but they could just kind of maybe put a hoop house over these or something along those lines, let them grow, harvest them basically for scapes, you're saying? Like,
well, for green, you know, basically for greens, you know, like mm-hmm. you would green onions, essentially.
Gotcha. So the leaves themselves are just kind of garlicky greens.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have nice flavor.
Mm-hmm.
That part will be good, but yeah, certainly keep plant, I mean, if they can get garlic. I mean, I am out. It's been kind of funny lately. We're getting a lot of evening phone calls. And a lot of them, of course, are politically oriented. So it's been a game And I start, even, you know, before anybody gets a chance to talk, the question is this call about garlic or politics? And at least for me, it's actually, we're about 2-1 ahead on garlic.
Oh, wow, wow.
Uh-huh. People fuck for garlic. But anyway, yeah. So some of the political people, they just hang up, I guess. They don't want to talk about garlic. It's a lost cause.
Wow. Wow. That's funny. Oh. Okay. Well, that's great information. And so,
More useful information might be talking about harvesting our carrots and other, at least root vegetables that we might want to, anything we might want to store for long term, or how soon to harvest, or how long can we leave them in the ground.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm looking at my carrots, which are still protected by the electric fence, keep the marauding bears away. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I mean, some of them I see the orange tops of the carrots, and some I can tell they've already split. So I know that when I go to harvest, those split carrots, they're going to be turned into stew, most likely, or something like that. They'll have to be used up. But as I'm harvesting, I can leave them in the ground, certainly. As long as the ground's not frozen, I can leave them in the ground. That's a great place to store carrots. But you can't let them freeze. So when you do decide that it's time, you know, we got the, like I said, we got the frost warnings, and though we're probably going to have warmer weather after that, I could certainly throw blankets or fleeces and plastic over to keep them from freezing for a while longer. The other challenge is, because we have so many voles and mice this year, if I were to cover them, then that's just making the best habitat for those voles to chew down into my carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Beets would be another one, and beets are even more of a favorite for voles than the carrots are. So you can actually get around that kind of by hilling the beets and carrots, piling up some soil or sand around them. It seems like the voles don't dig into it to get at the tops of them too much. But if we're gonna dig them, then get them dug out. I will hose them down, hose off most of the soil off the carrots and the beets, and then those will be sorted for quality. Only the best ones are gonna go into storage, and anything that's got damage, anything, all these, you know, the multiple fork carrots and all that stuff, those are gonna be set aside. Those are the ones that are gonna be eaten first. Kind of like we talked about harvesting potatoes, so the scabby or cracked potatoes or damaged ones, those are set aside to be eaten first. Then I do actually with carrots and beets both, I'll do kind of like I do with potatoes, in that I'll, after washing them off, I'll have them on trays in my garage in pretty much in the dark, and let the skin dry out at least overnight. I don't, with potatoes, I'll leave them go for a week or two maybe. But not so long for carrots and beets, because they can dry out too much. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the tops have been trimmed carefully, and then they go into, for me, my favorite still, these days at least, I've got a spare garage fridge, and they, so those potatoes or beets will go, I mean carrots or beets, will go into Ziploc bags and into the refrigerator. And that's where they will get stored for the winter. Other alternatives include, which I have used in the past and don't because I have this space, and are in my root cellar, I can have use tubs, make sure the tubs, or even if you're using 5-gallon buckets, have holes, ventilation holes in the sides and bottom. And you can layer in, and this can be tubs like gear tubs, you know, halibut gear tubs, that people use, but you'd want to actually drill some more holes even in the sides and perhaps in the bottom too for drainage. And layer the carrots or beets in. Turnips and rutabagas are another one that you can do exactly the same thing with. A little layer either of sand, damp sand, or damp sawdust. And lay the potato, I mean the hot potatoes, carrots or beets or turnips, rutabagas, in there. Just barely cover them and do another layer in there. And again, make sure there's some moisture there. And so if they're in your root cellar, it's worthwhile during the fall and winter going back and check the moisture levels, and if that especially is drying up some, give them light sprinkling of water to keep the moisture levels high.
Gotcha. So we're talking about this moisture is to keep the carrots from drying out and kind of cracking or withering during storage, but is there a kind of a fine balance there between too moist or?
Oh, yeah, of course. And that's, again, that's why we need to make sure that there are plenty of holes, ventilation holes, both, and it's both for drainage, water moisture drainage, so the stuff drains out, as well as so that the air can circulate through the sand or through the sawdust, because again, these roots are alive and they need air, they need oxygen.
Gotcha.
If you had a bucket with holes in the bottom, they feed too moist in the bottom. I mean, even if it was just moisture in the very bottom, and again, you stacked up your layers of these things, you can, especially that bottom layer is likely to go anaerobic, no oxygen, and they start to rot because they are, those roots are respiring. They are breathing. And so they've got to have that air circulation in there. And of course, you might ask, well, what's happening with the Ziploc bags in your refrigerator? They're probably not breathing much. That's the question you were about to ask, I'm sure.
It actually is.
Okay. So sometimes I'll leave just a very small, just slightly open in the corner of that. And again, I will also be checking those during the winter time. One, to see that they're not too wet. And that's, again, that's why drying them for a day, overnight or for a day or two, before you put them in the bags, so they're not too wet, is important. And again, check to make sure you don't have one starting to rot in a corner, which will cause more of them to rot. That's bad news.
And is the moisture in the Ziploc bag, is that like basically evaporating out of the carrot, kind of being exhaled out of it?
Yes, exactly. You know, and again, of course, it's condensing on the inside of the plastic. So again, that's where you've got to be that fine line of just enough moisture, not too much moisture. They talk about having, you know, being 80% to 90% humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we don't quite want 100%.
Right.
But again, this works well enough that, I mean, I still have carrots in my fridge from last year.
Nice.
I'm eating that. They are crisp. They are tasty. And I mean, it's some of the best storage we've had.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you manage it, however, there's times it seems like, and it almost seems like it's an every other year thing, that in the other years I will have carrots start to get moldy, and then I will lose a whole lot of carrots suddenly.
Mm.
You know, the mold gets started. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm just, like I said, I've got these big trays. I wash the carrots off. I let them dry out a bit after sorting out the good ones from the bad ones. And something happens. And I start to lose carrots, and then I get quite unhappy because I really don't like to buy store-bought carrots.
Right, right. You know, one thing I noticed, so I've done a couple of rounds of carrots this year. You know, my earlier carrots were great. They didn't last long, so they were so good. And now I have carrots still growing, and pulled out a few, just kind of sampling them, nibbling on them the other day, and my goodness, they were so sweet and so good. And as it's colder, I feel like there's, you know,
yep,
same seeds, almost the same soil, and the difference in flavor was amazing.
Yeah.
And so I'm in no hurry to yank those out of the ground because I'd love them to keep just staying sweet and growing more. And what's the latest I could possibly kind of edge those up as far as to winter goes?
Well, one of the reason why they have more sweet, more flavor, better flavor, and more sweetness, even though you may have big carrots in August, say, if you planted them early, the cooler temperatures means the carrots are changing starches to sugars. And the exact same thing happens to potatoes. So that if you take, you know, dig your potatoes now, or say if you dug them a month ago and dug them out and have them in your garage or someplace for storage, and it's in the warmer end of things, like above 40 degrees, their starches are more prevalent in the potato. But as they cool down, the starch changes to sugar. So if you refrigerate potatoes, then that happens, and those refrigerated potatoes are sweeter than unrefrigerated potatoes. Same thing happens with carrots and the other assorted root crops, that as temperatures go down, sugars, more sugars are available, converted from starch, and they do taste much better. So that's, so you're trying to keep those sugars, of course, for best eating, and that's again where that temperature, keeping them below 40 degrees, but obviously above freezing, is important. And that's more the challenge where in a root cellar, trying to get them down and keep them down at those cooler temperatures is the challenge.
Mm. So do you think they're going to split as soon as there's the first real frost around here? Like, it's going to be 30 degrees here this weekend.
Yeah. No, it's usually not. I mean, usually, I mean, where you'll get, where you get some, if it's a hard frost, I mean, if the soil actually freezes, then you, where you get the damage is right there in the top, at the shoulders of the carrots, the top of the carrots. And that's where you'll get some pre-thaw action. Just the tops, you'll get little cracks up there, where these long longitudinal cracks that you see are basically full maturity, and some of it can be moisture fluctuations too, much like with potatoes, where we've got, like last summer particularly, where it was really dry, and then, well, or if you water it, or if we get a big rainstorm, suddenly they may crack, because they suddenly start to grow some more, where they kind of quit growing, and they grow faster than the skin can expand and all that. I don't know exactly all the physiology there.
Right.
But, again, it's part of its maturity, and you'll have the same problem, very similar problem, with cabbages, where, again, cabbages get to a mature point. And, again, in the seed catalogs, they very often will advertise that these varieties will hold in the field without cracking longer. But when they get to that mature stage and they're ready, they should be picked, or they're actually ready to, they crack so that the flower stalk can come up out of the head of cabbage. Not the same as carrots and potatoes, but still it's a maturity issue. So, and some will and some won't. You know, you have a row of carrots and you might have 4 out of 50 carrots that are cracked, because whether they're just slightly ahead, a little more mature, or something else. Mm-hmm. And so obviously you need to get them out and eat them up quick.
Gotcha. Okay. That sounds good.
It isn't usually the frost that's going to cause the long cracks in the carrots.
Oh.
It's maturity.
I see.
So, and there are, again, when you're choosing varieties, there's early, if you're looking at days to maturity, that makes a difference too. So, some that may be listed as being storage carrots, so they'll store longer, versus fresh eating carrots.
Hmm.
And same thing with cabbages, early, mid, and late season cabbages. You know, storing those is more of a challenge. You can do it in big plastic bags. You can pull the whole cabbage up, and again, if you've got a cool root cellar, literally hang the cabbage upside down, you know, tie it, put a string around the roots and hang it up in there, nice and cool, and the wrapper leaves hopefully will protect them from drying out. And the other hopeful thing is that you didn't bring along a slug or two to keep eating out the center of the cabbages hanging.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That would be so sad. We just got a call coming in here, so I'm going to pull up the caller here on line one, and let's see what's on their mind. Welcome, caller. You're on the air with Ed Bajarski.
Hello, Ed and Oren. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep, clearly.
Ed, early you were talking about cutting down salmon berries, and that got me thinking. We have salmon berries all around our house, and we like them, and we love to get the berries from them. So, and I don't know anything about cultivating them or anything like that. I've been told that, like, cutting them back every once in a while will get me more berries. Is that true, and how often do I do that, and do I just hose them to the ground and let them grow back up, or what can you tell me?
If you want to, I can send you a tote full of salmon berries that I'm digging them out with a skid steer and a forklift, because I want to plant something else. But you're right. You know, they're related to raspberries, which is fairly obvious, and they're not quite as biennial as a raspberry is, where, you know, this year's crop of the stems that gave us fruit this year, you would cut down because they will die, and then the new shoots that came up this year will give fruit next year. You get some of that with salmon berries, but some of the same branches keep bearing fruit year after year. So still, if you clear cut your whole patch, then of course you wouldn't get any berries next year. But what you could do is cut, well, potentially you could cut strips out of it, if you want to make yourself a path through it, maybe, to make it easier to get to. Selectively cut out some of them, which will stimulate new growth in the spring. And then that new growth will, you know, next year you'll get the new growth. The year after that, you would then get berries, flowers, and then berries on those, just like the raspberries do.
So I can do it, but a little less. I don't need to be as selective as I would if I was doing raspberries. I can just cut some down here and there, and those will eventually grow back and give me, and I will get more berries in the long run if I do that than if I just let them grow naturally.
Yeah, if you're looking at the 5-year plan or the 10-year plan, yes. And I mean, I don't know that I even want to suggest fertilizing them. Usually they grow just fine.
Yep.
But still, you could, and I know folks who fertilize their, you know, blueberries. And again, they thin out or take out the competition, whether it be hemlocks or spruce trees or the rusty Menziesii that grow among the blueberry plants. And again, you can do a little selective thinning. And with something like the salmon berries, you can see if you can wade into that patch, or you might wait until the leaves drop so you can see better. But take out some of those biggest, oldest canes out of there. And again, that will then, the new shoots that come up in 2 years will then be giving you more fruit. And I mean, I guess we can kind of connect that, keep going with that into currants and gooseberries, and pretty much the same thing. That again, you look at your clump of currants or gooseberries, and take out some of the biggest, oldest stems, and then new shoots will come up from the base for future flower and fruit production.
Great. Perfect. That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Okay. Very good, very good. Good to think about. Let's see here. We're kind of coming up on time. So are there any parting thoughts you want to leave people with as we're heading into the weekend?
Let's talk about one more root vegetable that we don't dig except as we need it, or we might cover for just a little bit of protection, and that's parsnips, obviously related to carrots. But parsnips they're more fibrous, for one thing, but can be sweet, and they get sweeter as it gets colder. But they can stay in the ground over the winter time. We don't have to harvest them. That freezing thawing action doesn't cause them to crack and split and rot. So those are nice. I mean, usually I can see my bunch of rows of parsnips, and these are some I actually planted the seeds of a year ago. Planted them in the fall seed, and they sprouted this spring the new experiment. But those can stay in the ground, you know, pull out some that you want. And again, you can put them in bags in the refrigerator. That's a good place to store them. But otherwise, you know, potentially throw some plastic over a tarp or something like that, so that if you want parsnips for Thanksgiving or for Christmas, you can pull the tarp back. And if the ground isn't frozen underneath there, then you can dig them. And again, you can wait till spring, wait till the ground thaws in the springtime in March or so, and dig up fresh parsnips, which are awfully tasty that time of year. So that's one that's, you know, different, more hardy than the relatives, the carrot.
Nice. That sounds like a mighty fun prospect in the spring, because I can only imagine that they're at their very sweetest at that point, given what we're talking about the cold temperature starch sugar conversion there.
Right. And again, and one of the reasons I do some of this also, leave them in until spring, I'll harvest most, but I'll leave a few plants that will then sprout and grow and flower, and I will collect fresh parsnip seeds. So I've been doing that now for about 5 or 6 years, have fresh seeds, to plant when I need to plant them. And so that's one more advantage. You know, you can be selecting your own that way.
Yes, yes, indeed. On a sort of similar topic, a few months ago, I think, I was telling you about this one carrot that I had planted from seed, and it became an absolute giant, you know, superstar carrot. You know, months ago, it was 4 feet tall, and I really want to harvest the seeds from that thing just to try it, you know. And I was thinking I would have to, you know, harvest the root, the carrot, and plant it again next year and have it go through a two-year thing, but it has just kept growing fast and is now covered in big flowers. So I'm hoping it goes to seed before winter finishes off the, you know.
But yeah, that's going to be a challenging one. And again, part of the problem, you know, to some extent, that would be a carrot. If you planted that carrot from seed this spring, you said, and then it bolted, that's what it did. I mean, it went to maturity and grew. Normally, that would be one that would not want to be selected for. Normally, you would want to take those carrots, which you do store over the winter, and see that they store well, to replant, because that characteristic of sprouting to flower the first year from seed would be something you would want to discourage.
That's so true.
Encourage. You know, yes, it might be an easy one to get seeds from, but the better ones you want to get seeds from are those that overwinter.
Ah, the tragedy of my greed. It's so true.
It's a cool thing to watch, and so something different. But yeah, and you, if you see those happening, and I've seen them even from mine, occasionally you'll get them bolting. If you pull those up, then you'll notice that those carrots, the center of them gets quite woody, very fibrous and woody, because again, they're using up the sugars to grow up, and so what's left behind is the fibers and stuff.
That's true. I'm sure that this thing is much more woody than it is a nice eating plant, because darn thing is like 7 feet tall and with multiple branches blowing in the wind. It's an astonishing carrot. I'm shocked by it, but that does make good and tragic sense that it's a fool's errand to cultivate seeds out of that one. But interesting to see it happening. I definitely learned that the carrot has sort of two different timelines of pollinating elements on one part and the flowers with ovaries over here, and their different timing, and trying to figure out the art of pollinating carrots has been kind of interesting.
Right. Well, hopefully, I mean, it'd be nice. And again, if you're growing them deliberately, of course, you would normally have a bunch of plants, and they're usually very attractive to insects to do the pollination. There's various flies and stuff. So, like in my greenhouse, hoop house, I've got dill, which has the same, you know, is closely related to carrots also. And, you know, the different, those flat flower heads are all very convenient, more for flies and other critters than for bees, it seems like. And it may be that there isn't much for, maybe there's not so much nectar there. But usually there, if you have enough of them, then they'll, you know, Mother Nature will take care of the pollination.
Yeah, makes good sense. Well, maybe that's a good point to leave it on, as we've had a nice long show here. But so we have kind of this last week where folks can be out there digging down. I mean, another week around here, certainly before it's really a hard frost. Any parting thoughts to leave people with before we sign off for the week?
Well, yeah. Keep thinking. Again, I was planting kale seeds with young people, young kids yesterday. And think about planting some stuff now as well as harvesting. And start dreaming, you know, more dreaming about next year. But again, and maybe we want to plan for next week's being cleaning up the garden, doing more of the garden cleanup, and tucking away some of these plants as I look out at my perennial patches and other assorted stuff, and I think you see an awful lot of work ahead of me yet in the garden.
Okay. Well, as it's coming up on the... Yeah, the season is coming to a close, so we'll probably consider maybe last week, or next week, the last week of the season, and so we'll kind of float that out to folks if they have final questions for the season that they want to take the opportunity to prod your knowledge. we can look forward to next week as getting a chance to be the final questions for the season.
Okay, sounds good, Aaron.
All right, Ed, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Okay, yep, bye-bye.
Till then. Okay, folks, that's In the Garden, Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. Great opportunity to learn from somebody with just so much experience in the garden in this this hard-to-grow-in climate down here. So encourage folks, if you have big questions, don't be shy. Let us know, and we'll get them answered for you. And again, next week will be the last show of the season. So till then. And we do want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite In the Garden. And they are closed for the season. And thanking all their customers for giving each other flowers so often this year. They are looking ahead to next year and have already placed orders for new trees and shrubs. And they want folks to know that the Flower Farm itself is for sale. 772-3464. Coming up next is going to be some high country music. Tunes picked out for you by Chris Ford.
This life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see.